I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod. Howell and Jamie here. Lovely to have you with us, as always. And today we talk about another box set that you may or may not have watched, The Sopranos. Yes, it's a giantissimo of box sets, and we're going to come to that in a bit with our guests. But first, as usual, Howell and Jamie here. Hope you are.
Yo.
I hope you're doing well. You can email us. I always listen back to the podcast, and I always think we don't stress how important it is that we get your emails. We love it when you email, and what we want to do is create a kind of message board, but without the without the really annoying comments, bad language. Yeah, but rather a fascist message board where we get to filter out all of the offensive comments.
Yeah.
We'd love you to email us, studio@theboxsetpod.com. What are we asking? What have you watched? What haven't you watched? And also, I'd love to know, if you listen to one of these podcasts and you haven't watched the thing that our guinea pig hasn't watched, and then you watch it as a result of our chat, it would be great to hear your progress. Of course, a couple of weeks ago, I was the guinea pig, and I hadn't watched Walking Dead. I've got to tell you, Jamie, I have now watched... I'm on to the last episode of season one, so that's a whole six
episodes.
Definitely gone past the four, and up six.
You're going to carry on into season two, Howell?
Yep.
Although, really?
What I'm doing is I'm buying it. Every episode I'm buying individually on my Apple TV, on iTunes. So it's £1.89 every time.
Ooh.
And do you know what? It really makes your decision-making... You know, it really helps you judge a show if you have to actually know that you're spending £1.89 every time. And it makes you pay more attention to it. And this is something that I've thought about the cinema for a long time as well. You know, when you watch a film at the cinema, not only is it bigger, it's better sound, but you're more invested. You're more invested in paying attention. You're not looking at 12 other screens because you've freaking just paid £9.
Exactly. Amen.
Exactly. So, moral of the story is, pay for your entertainment and you'll naturally get more out of it. Either that or you'll ditch it sooner, and then you need this podcast to get you beyond episode four.
I'm genuinely shocked that you're going to do second season of Walking Dead, but I didn't see you last year. I mean, I suppose it's only six episodes, the first series, but still.
But you all said that it was the worst series as well.
We all said it was the worst.
Yeah, you said that season one is the worst in my...
Okay. Well, I guess I think that... Well, I don't think it's... Yeah, I guess in a way they get more dramatic, but I don't think you'll last more than... I don't think you'll get past season two. I'm surprised you got this far. If you do carry on, I'd be bloody amazed.
Okay. All right. I'm enjoying it. I think it's good. Sarah won't watch it. It's when Sarah goes to bed, I watch Walking Dead. That's how it works.
Nice.
Okay, listen, let's get the latest box set news before we welcome Mel, who is ready, willing and able, and Matt, who is having great difficulty connecting to us. He's having a lot of traumas with his old computer in London there. It's because he lives in London where everything is poorer. The quality of general household things like bricks and things are a lot poorer than in Manchester. So let's crack on with the latest news from Jamie.
Well, before I do that, we did have an email from Daniel Knight. Did you read this, Howell?
How did I miss Daniel's email?
I do not know. But he's aiming it directly at you, Howell. Are you ready?
Jesus.
He says, firstly, well done on finishing 24. I'm interested, though, when it starts to become more must-watch telly, as I never made it past season two. Ah, right. So I'm interested, when does it start becoming much-watch telly, Howell?
What does it become?
You know what the shit I'm saying.
No, okay. I'll answer when you ask properly.
When does it become must watch telly, Howell?
Does it? Yeah, I think the thing is, I've done a lot of things. I've essentially built a travel website, which I'll tell you about in future weeks, whilst watching 24. It became like a warm blanket to me, a lot like Dexter and indeed Chuck, which we'll talk about again. It's one of those things that you get to know the world and you get to like it. You get to recognise its memes and enjoy those things, you know. But I do think that it gets better with age, because it becomes, like a lot of these series, you get closer to the day and things become a bit more relevant and certainly more exciting, perhaps a bit higher budget as it goes along. So
you did seem to go through a stage where you stopped, where you were like slagging it off quite a lot.
But I would have thought that by season three, I went quiet on the slagging it off because I just submitted to it. There's other things to watch before 24, but if you want, how many TV series are an action movie?
That's very true.
Can you think of another TV series that is just action?
Chuck is
largely action. But in a very different sense, this is kind of your Bruce Willis level of commitment. You know, there's no humour in 24, really. It's for that reason. I like a good action movie. Mindless, that's how I'd describe it. If you'd like to be mindless, yeah.
Daniel continues, Howell. You were talking about Outlander a while back. I wouldn't recommend it. I'm 2/3 of the way through and found out that at the end of season one, there's a graphic gay rape scene.
Spoiler.
I only started watching as I thought it was a light-hearted time travel mystery, so I'm not going to finish it. Plus, you need subtitles to understand dialogue. Too much for me. Thirdly, I'm now interested in Chuck. All this time you spent talking about it, I knew nothing about, but thanks to you, to your last episode, it sounds like it might be fun. Quick recommendations, Quantico and Limitless are good. Blind Spot is all right. New Heroes Reborn is a waste of TV. 5 years and this is what they wrote. Ant-Man, don't see the hype. Excuse the pun, but felt that the plot was very small scale. So much just not explained as well. Daniel, thank you.
I like Daniel's comments, and I like Daniel. I just want to check that the reason he didn't like that rape scene wasn't particularly that it was gay. I hope he's like a normal, a heterosexual rape scene would be all right.
I don't think he was saying that.
Because I don't think sexual preference actually matters when it comes to a scene of rape.
I think he's just
there's
saying
no
the
consent,
whole...
and that's kind of his nature.
That's the point. That's the point he's trying to make. Okay.
I think he's using as many words as possible to point out that this was horrific, and he didn't want to carry on after something that disturbing. I understand. Yeah, that. I'm not going to watch that. Thanks. This is the other good thing about this podcast: is people are like the canary down the mine shaft for you, aren't they? They like get so far, and they're like shouting back down the mine shaft at you, just going, "Don't come in here." It's great.
Yeah, it's a good point. But also, like, if someone has watched Outlander and says it's awesome, you can let us know too, because there's always an audience for it. And Outlander is massively successful. At least it's got a huge sort of critical acceptance. Anyway, let's get on to the box set pod news, okay?
Yeah, I'm also going to dial up Jack, our work experience boy, because he wanted to join us for the news as well. And then we'll get rid of him and get Mel and Matt on. Mel waiting patiently in Kansas.
What a legend.
Yeah. So Jack's going to appear any second.
Okay, let's make a start on the boxsetpod.com. So if you go to the boxsetpod.com/news, I try my very best to update it with anything that tickles my fancy. Of course, I'm not going to put every piece of TV news on there. I just handpick my special pieces. Is he here, Howell?
Jack? No.
I can see his face, but okay.
Yeah, he's got a beard. Beards are massive with the kids.
He's got a Justin Bieber style or early Justin Bieber style haircut going on. Looks very fashionable.
Oh, really, Justin Bieber? I'd say
back
more
in the early
Dave
days.
Grohl.
Well, yeah, maybe that. But I mean, you look at early Justin Bieber with when he had long hair, he did have it a bit messy. Actually, no, it's more Zac Efron. Actually, I'm thinking of Zac Efron.
And a bit of a beard going on. It's the the hipster beard thing is all the trend now. I went to watch Skrillex. Did I tell you? No, I didn't. I went to a club. I went to the Warehouse Project. It was drum and bass. And
did you go there?
A couple of weeks ago, and it was drum and bass night. When I go like to clubs in Vegas, everyone's kind of similar age. I don't feel really old. In Britain, honestly, I said the words, "I feel like I'm surrounded by Little Mix and One Direction." Whoa. It was. They just felt so young, and all the lads had beards. It's this hipster crap that's going on at the moment. Yeah. Who wants a beard? It's horrible. Jamie had a beard, but that's because he was having a nervous breakdown.
That was a low patch.
Carry on with the news.
Anyway, so, yeah, the first bit of news I've got, Transparent Season 2 is returning December 11th on Amazon Prime. If you've not given Transparent a go, it's an award-winning Golden Globe award-winning comedy from Amazon. It's really good, and it's about a transgender parent. He's a dad, and he reveals to his family that he's transgender, and it's the how the family reacts. It's very funny, but it's also very moving. It's a bit like Girls in the way the humor is very similar to Girls. It's very sort of very raw, but it's brilliant. It's really worth a go. It's an excellent show, and the teaser trailer is up there on the Box Set Pod website. You can see the teaser for season 2, which starts December 11th.
And let's face it, transgender is in right now.
Big
and
time.
I don't mean people are deciding to be transgender. I mean, there's a lot of TV programs.
A lot of documentaries.
Documentaries, and Sense8 had a fair bit of transgender stuff in there as well. Nice to see.
Great to see what's going down. Here's a bit of Broadchurch news. Howell's, of course, you've not watched Broadchurch, either, have you, Howell?
No.
Right, well, first season's great, second season stinks. But the third season may end up being the final season. It turns out that David Tennant, who plays the main character, a.k.a. Detective Alex Hardy, he said the show was conceived as a trilogy. Now, we all know that trilogy means three. So that means that the next season, the third season, could well be the last. But obviously, this is all dependent on ratings and critical reviews, because it may do amazingly again. I mean, at the height of Broadchurch season one, it had 9 to 10 million viewers watching every episode a night. So who knows?
Who knows?
And another point, actually, Mark Gatiss recently did an interview where he said TV, he said ratings, TV ratings are dead. There is no way of properly measuring how successful a show is anymore. But I say to you, Gatiss, the Box Set Pod chart is the place to go. That's where you find out how successful you are, sir.
Mark.
Gatiss. Last bit of news for you. I want to mention Obama. Barack Obama has come out. Guess what Barack Obama's favourite TV show is, Howell?
It's Homeland.
It used to be Homeland. Oh. You fell into my trap. Thank you very much. His new favourite show is Game of Thrones. Oh. Howell, who do you think his favourite character is on Game of Thrones?
Tyrion Lannister.
Tyrion Lannister. He couldn't remember his name, though. He just said the dwarf. Is his favourite character. The only character name he could remember was Jon Snow, but he bloody loves Game of Thrones.
Look at that.
Oh, your knees.
Do you think he has actually watched it, or people just go, mention it? It was he was on Mark Maron, and he said, oh, yeah, I like comedy. I like your friend Lewis. Called Louis C.K. Lewis. Yeah, it was a bit clunky. I do wonder,
because he said he didn't remember any of the character names other than Jon Snow, and you do kind of wonder if maybe he's just been briefed on what's popular. I mean, I like to think Barack's not like that. Yeah. I like to think Barack is a guy who would go, I'm going to bloody watch it. You're going to debrief me what's popular, and I'll watch the show, and I'll decide if I like it.
I just can't imagine that he's got this. You know, I'm a man who's got the time to watch 8.5 series of 24. I don't think the leader of the free world can watch every episode of Game of Thrones.
The question is this: do you want the leader of the free world to be able to have time to binge watch TV?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Now, you mentioned the chart a couple of times there, Jamie, and therefore I can't brush it under the carpet. As Ben did suggest to me, he did say any chance. Let's see. Do you think it could be quietly skipped for a week?
I'll
make sure I do it in future.
Diabolical.
He's pushing a film into production this week. He's been very busy. He's sent me a lot of apologetic texts. I said, of course, I won't mention it. We will slip it under the rug. Nobody will know that we even do a chart.
Don't give me that baloney, Ben. Oh, there's some film he's working on. He's just sat in his bedroom again. All he does with his time, pretending to edit documentaries. He's absolutely full of it. I mean, God, we don't even know what he really does as a job. I'm sure he just makes a lot of the stuff up. What he should be doing is spending all his time working on the chart.
That Mark Gatiss is asking for one, so why not?
Exactly.
All right, it's time for this week's debate. Mel is waiting on the line, and we've had a nightmare trying to connect with Matt, but I've just seen him appear.
Have we got contact? Bloody hell.
What's going on? You sound a little bit low bit rate.
I don't know. My wife's laptop is a disaster.
Blame the wife.
Not the wife, the laptop. She must have done something to it, I'm sure.
It's your blatant sexism coming through again, and we haven't even started. Let's get on with it. So, welcome to the podcast once again, Mel and Matt. Matt from London, and as we found out last week, Grumpy Town, and Mel from Chuck.tv. Chuck.net, I always get
Chuck
that wrong.
ChuckTV.net.
ChuckTV.net. Matt kindly watched the first two episodes of Chuck last week. He was in the court, being persuaded to carry on till episode 4, as was Jamie. And the deal was that Mel would embark upon The Sopranos, something that she has never wanted to watch. Mel would watch that episode under the deal that both Matt and Jamie and Jamie and Jamie would make it to episode 4 of Chuck. Let's go first to Matt. Matt, how did you get on?
I'm on episode 5, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Let's put that in your pipe and smoke it.
And while you're smoking it, let's go now to Jamie.
I've not watched any episodes. Let me just step in here in Jamie's defence.
You're going to have to, because there's a big
Jamie's
gaping
defense.
Gap of
Are
disappointment.
Are you referring to yourself in the third person?
I am indeed. That's what Jamie does these days. And Jamie has genuinely been very, very unable to watch a single thing. I haven't even watched Walking Dead in 3 weeks.
Just because you were working.
Love that show.
Is this because you've got a new job?
Just because I'm working. I've been I had a crazy weekend. That's when I was going to do loads of catching up, but then we had all
Saturday
kinds of crap going
down. I didn't realise that you worked Saturday and Sunday as well.
No, Howell, but I had all kinds of other stuff on the smorgasbord of life to deal with. We had a washer dryer broke down. Spilt sewage all over the carpet. We were cleaning that all weekend.
You were cleaning sewage all weekend.
Off the carpet, Howell. Off the carpet. Shampooing carpets was my weekend.
Now you.
I think we can accept that as.
Thank you.
That's like it's like a doctor's note, right?
Thank you, Mel. Thank you. Oh,
Mel,
this is nothing like
a
doctor's note.
Far too kind.
Now that's your. That's your one pass. That's your one pass, though. You've used it up on sewage, so...
Yeah, but sewage... I'll give him sewage for maybe Saturday, but not Saturday and Sunday. I mean, Jamie spews a lot of shit, but not a weekend's worth, surely.
You said, you know things are bad when I've not watched any TV, and I really haven't watched... I don't know what's going on in all my favourite programmes, Howell. That is a man on the edge. Okay.
Wow.
All right. So Chuck's not the only one being neglected. There's a whole smorgasbord again of TV shows getting neglected.
I just think that this is coming out in anger when it should be coming out in apologies, especially towards Mel.
I apologize, especially to Mel for shampooing my carpet.
Okay. So first of all,
accepted.
Both of you, I enjoyed listening to the podcast last week. It was exciting, particularly listening to how much better Mel dealt with Matt's questions around feminism than I did. I was rubbish at it. It took us so long, Mel, to get to the point, which was her character is using sex. The whole point of her character when it comes to Chuck is that she's supposed to be sexy and seducing him. That is the whole point. Matthew, you have continued to watch Chuck. Is this still a... Is Yvonne Strahovski's shocking outfit still a problem for you?
There is a scene in Chuck versus the Wookiee.
Oh,
where,
yes?
She has to quickly...
Does it involve a white bikini?
No.
Oh, not that
I don't,
one.
I didn't notice that bikini. She wears some kind of swimsuit, but I didn't find it particularly shocking. There is a scene where she has to get changed quickly in the back of a Jeep. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, there's a shot at the beginning where she's like constantly poking her head between the seats and that's fine. But then there's a shot of her pulling her skirt up over her hot pants.
Yeah.
Oh,
from her point of view.
Jamie just made it to episode 5.
And
count me in.
At that point, I was like, come on. Come on. What's going on here? Why do we need to see her changing in the back of the Jeep?
Just get used to it, man. What is going on with you? What's the problem?
Look, I listened to last week's episode as well, and the point that I failed to make is that it doesn't... Oh, God, I feel like I'm just... I listened back to it. I didn't enjoy it. I felt like I was an ass.
You were.
Just like an ass anchor dragging the show down into the
sea. Sometimes radio is a mirror.
Wait, there's a mental image. Ow.
Yeah, an ass anchor, like a big anchor shaped like a porcelain ass with my name on it.
Yeah.
Yvonne
Strahovski is the ass of Chuck. You are the ass of this podcast, and you both serve a purpose. This is what you have to understand.
She is the ass of Chuck. And then they brought in another beautiful secret agent as well, who used sex as a weapon.
Ah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She was fun.
Yeah, she returns a couple more times. Spoiler alert. Matt, were you trying to say that it felt gratuitous?
It just looks like it looks like fan service as far as mm-hmm. I'm saying. That's fine. Yeah. You know, it's not. Look, I'm not. I should say I'm not really bothered by this. Mm. I don't actually think it's terrible that it's doing some kind of horrible disservice to the gender, but it's just it's in the forefront of my mind. Mm. As I said in my email outside of the podcast, it's just I have a 2-year-old girl, and I'm like I'm reading all this stuff about. Gender equality and seeing this kind of thing is just it makes you realize how easily we digest it because it is imbalanced.
There's
no way to say that it isn't.
There is also no way to say that number one that it should be balanced. Who says that things should be balanced? I certainly don't think so. I'm a big fan of Fox News. Number two, Matthew, you're just going to have to come to terms with the fact that one day, not for at least 16 years, one day your daughter may be interested in sex. Maybe.
No, I know, but I don't have a problem with that.
I think it is. I think we're listening to a man having to really, like, this is the power of the father of, like, this is why it's so terrifying to bring a boy home for the first time. You're hearing it now. Matt is going through it. It's like coming to terms with the fact that his daughter is of the female gender, therefore she has to operate in a world which is which often objectifies women. And mm-hmm. and that's true. And up until this point, Matt hasn't thought about it this much. And now we've caused a midlife crisis just by talking about Chuck.
I'm glad, though. Yeah, I'm glad that happened. I'm glad you're thinking about this, Matt. I'm glad that this is, as a father of a daughter, that this is forefront in your mind and it's of a concern for you. And maybe we'll lead to discussions down the road about issues that will be really helpful as she gets older and has to deal with this world. So,
Chuck.
I mean, I think it's a good thing. I think it's admirable that you are actually engaging in this discussion with us. Mm.
Did you enjoy it though, Matt? Did you actually enjoy the show?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think because again, listening back to last week, I think the reason I made the comparison to 30 Rock and Community is that that's where this show kind of sits in my TV repertoire in that it's something that I'll watch while I go to sleep.
Yes.
It's mm-hmm. not something that I sort of set aside an hour for, mm-hmm. like, say, The Sopranos.
No.
Where I feel like I need to really sit and focus. It just washes over me like a nice warm ocean wave.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And keep and letting that wash
I think
over.
Yeah, and I think the first season in particular, it does do that as it's building the universe and building the mythology.
Yeah.
Things get considerably more complicated as you go forward, but yeah, that first season, it's a lot of fun, and it's not, I mean, they're dealing with some complex things under the surface if a viewer wants to look under the surface, but if a viewer just wants to watch to enjoy it, then that's there for them too. I mean,
and that's what I realized as well, listening back to our debate and getting down to it, I realized that actually the number one thing about this is the word fun. And it's very difficult when you act as a pundit on a podcast like this, or when clearly Matt is a guy who thinks about the world a lot and enjoys meaty television. All of us probably are fans of Mad Men and things that are challenging. Well, we're mm-hmm. also have the id inside us as well, and we need entertainment. And we need to mm-hmm. sometimes switch off at the end of the day. And Chuck is definitely one of those things. Mel's right, mm-hmm. it does get deeper, but it's not the deepest pool in the world. It's never mm-hmm. as deep as mm-hmm. the other things that you probably watch, but it definitely... I'm glad that you... It's almost like saying don't overanalyze it on a podcast that analyzes the shit out of it.
Yes.
So, Sopranos, let's move on. Mel, did you watch episode one of The Sopranos?
I actually watched... the first two episodes.
Ooh.
Good for you.
Just to get a little more into.
Let's not go into opinion just yet. Mel, will you please, for anyone who hasn't watched The Sopranos, will you give us a sort of introductory blurb about what is this show about?
This show, Sopranos, is ultimately about relationships between Tony Soprano, the lead, and his what do we want to say? Biological family versus his professional family.
Oh yeah, very good.
So very well put.
Very nice.
Yeah. And how complicated it becomes, and I mean there's some overlap between the two families. There are members, you know, people he's related to that are in his professional family. Maybe family with a capital F.
Yeah.
Versus lowercase F. Yeah. And it's him trying to deal with those very complicated relationships and the blurring of the lines. I think he also has a daughter who's growing up and he's having to deal with that.
Matthew.
So
comes full circle.
Tony Soprano is Tony Soprano is a big feminist as well.
He's appalled at Chuck.
Yeah.
So great. Thank you. Yeah, that is very good. So, and I think on a very simple level, the premise is gangster goes to therapist.
I mean that's the conceit.
So what did you think?
I think it is really well made and really well acted and written. I am not sure if I'm supposed to sympathize with Tony and his problems, considering the life that he's built for himself is about murder and theft and money laundering. I have a hard time feeling sympathy for his problems when he is a criminal who doesn't really flinch about beating up somebody in broad daylight in front of 100 witnesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's where you're at.
I think it's really, really well made. I will say that. I mean, it's certainly interesting, and I can see that there's a lot of, like I said, it's a relationship drama, so there's a lot to mine there. I don't know if I will continue to watch it though,
mm-hmm.
because I just don't sympathize with the character.
Okay, good.
Can I ask just to get a read on the landscape? Do you like any mafia movies?
I don't know. I mean, we watched Godfather when I was younger.
Yeah.
And it was okay, but no, I don't often sympathize with the bad guy.
Yeah.
Okay. When he wants to do this whole poor me thing, and it's all related to these horrible things that he's doing. Well, I mean,
he gives a shit. That's what you're saying. He deserves it.
Maybe we're talking cause and effect here, and perhaps we should look more at the root of the problem and less at the symptom.
Okay. Jamie has witnessed me having this debate with people for about 10 years, which we're not going to have now, but about taste. And I had this theory, I created this theory quite a while ago when I set up a radio station, and people would come and everyone would tell me what they hated, which music they hated. And there was more often than not this middle ground where people would make what I said was a 70-30 argument of heart, of head, followed by heart, and it would be exactly what you've just done, exactly what Matt did for Chuck, and what I did for Walking Dead, which is where you come in, you intellectualize, you say, yeah, this is, you know, I can see that this is this, and then you go to heart at the end, and you go, but I don't think I'll ever love it, I don't think it's ever going to be for me, and this is the reason we have the 4-episode rule. The challenge now is to try and persuade Mel to carry on till 4 episodes. So what we need to deal with first is a problem that I had for my entire life, and I still have with gangster stuff, about sympathy. Jamie, why should we be sympathetic? How can Mel expect that she'll ever be sympathetic for this guy?
I didn't expect you to sympathise with Tony Soprano immediately. You're not going to, because he's a thug and he's a sociopath, and this is the big thing about this show, is like, how do you even relate to somebody like this? And it's in, as the main character, can you watch a show and not love the main character and not completely identify with them? But the thing with like Tony Soprano is there are times when, and the more you watch it, there are times when you actually do relate to him. You do find yourself seeing good in him. You know, that's the kind of brilliance of the show and shows like that, Breaking Bad stuff, that is just, there are times when you just feel like you really are connected to this character and you want to see them do good. And then they'll do something that is so violent and so horrific, and you just think, I can't believe this is the same person. And that's like, that's the thing, that the character will always confound you, but that's the journey. And in a way, that's kind of the love of the show, is like, it's never quite been able to sort of get your sort of full a fist around who this character is and like them and want them to do well in life. There are times when you want him to die or get arrested, and there are times when you want him to escape the police or kill another gangster. And that's the thing that you're dealing with in your head. It's a really difficult sort of argument with yourself, but that's the fun of it as well. That's why I love it.
I agree. And I think there's something that gets you through that as well, which is that you will find that your sympathy for Tony becomes almost unimportant. There are other people in his life that you feel the sympathy for, which allows you to then love and hate him, or just hate him.
Yeah.
Doesn't this sound like a completely dysfunctional relationship?
Yep. And which TV show?
This is the boyfriend that. Well, but I mean, this is like the boyfriend that everybody tells you he can't be saved, and you're like, no, I can save him, and he gives you these little glimpses, and it's. It's, you know, that's the boyfriend that the therapist says, get out now.
Yeah,
so
totally.
Why should I continue this dysfunctional relationship?
Because it becomes a study into the person who is sticking with him, really, as much.
Exactly.
As
it's
a
about,
study of his wife.
Right.
It's about about fascination with them rather than liking them.
Yeah.
I'm curious, go on.
Do you all have other women in your lives who enjoy this show?
Yeah, Sarah.
Oh, my wife absolutely loves this.
Yeah, Sarah loved it as well. Yeah. Okay. Whereas, Mel, when we were talking about The Walking Dead a couple of weeks ago, I said to Matt, Jamie and Ben, I said, how do I persuade Sarah to carry on watching this with me? And they all unanimously didn't miss a beat and went, you can't. She'll never like it. So it's the opposite on this one. We're all saying... so far, it's 100% in favour of the female. In the favour of the female. And you're right, it is very well made. Matt, what were you... So it's about fascination and...
Yeah, certainly. I don't think there is any aspect of it which is trying to save Tony, because ultimately you might want him to succeed in what he does, even though what he does is terrible. But I mean, this is just from my point of view. I don't necessarily mean to say that this is how you'll feel, Mel. But I never wanted Tony to give up the lifestyle and go straight. That was never a goal for me within the show. Everything was for me was always about the relationships between the between his position and his family and the power plays between the Soprano family and the other families and the other people within his family who might have been trying to get him and the FBI and everything like that. But ultimately, he is the hero of the story. But you never like him. I mean, you like him in a kind of in a very strange way, but you never want to save him. I don't feel like that, and I don't feel like he needs to be saved in a way. It's just he's just a fact. He's the thing that exists.
I wanted,
and you just
escape.
Have to kind of.
I also wanted him to escape. Yeah, I did want that you wanted, and maybe Mel, if you're more like me in that you always hated gang, or you couldn't empathize enough with gangster films. I was the same. I got switched off by most things, including The Godfather. Just couldn't understand why I should care about these people. But with Tony Soprano, there is more opportunity, I think, because I think that there is a wrestle within him about whether he can get out of this, and that's what I hung my hat on was. Can he get out of this? Now, I'm not saying that that's how it should be watched. Matt is probably watching it in the correct way, but for me, who struggles with that stuff. What about you, Jamie? Did you want him to end up on a desert island, having escaped that world?
I don't know. I guess at different times it was different sort of. I wanted different things for him, but the first series, what I found with the first series, Mel, is that you watch the first few episodes and, like, Tony, you know, yeah, you do feel very alienated by him as a character, but as you get into the world of his own family and his mob family, and, like, his mother is a massive character in the first series. She's a huge, like, she's one of the most, she's just one of the most interesting characters you could ever watch on TV.
I don't
and
remember
you, she be, she's all
oh, man,
she's like
amazing.
She's the worst, she's a horrible human being. Like she's, yeah. And she becomes almost the bad guy in the first series.
Yeah, yeah.
And you see why Tony is who he is, where he's come from, and you see what he is with her and how he tries and you see a side to him that you wouldn't, and you see what she does and how she manipulates him and the rest of the family. And it is like that is part of the fascination with this, certainly in the first series.
You're absolutely right. I'd forgotten about that. And I think that is what makes this something that I watched for five series and loved, is that it is different from the other gangster stuff. Not that it goes, oh, isn't everybody screwed up because of their parents, but there really is an attempt to go, this is how this person was made. Now you decide, you know, and it's in that decision-making where the drama lies.
Did you guys know that David Chase created the show originally? It was about his relationship with his own combative mother, and then he just put it in the framework of the gangster world because that would be more commercially successful. Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, that actually is the whole the starting point for the entire series is that mother son relationship.
Are you on Google, Mel? Yeah.
No, I actually went to HitFix because I know Alan Sepinwall is a columnist, is their television columnist, and he originally wrote for the New Jersey Star Ledger.
Oh, wow.
Which Tony Soprano reads. He was Alan was a tremendous champion of Chuck, but also one of its harshest critics when necessary. And I've always enjoyed his writing, and I knew that he did a rewatch over the summer of the first season. So I went after I watched the first season of Sopranos. And so after I watched the first couple of episodes, I went to see what he had said about it. His observations were not, you know, he was coming at it from a different perspective and had other observations, but he always has these little facts and, you know, interesting insights.
Yeah, interesting one. The David Chase comment is really like true. Also, I heard David Chase say that when he watched Goodfellas originally, and there's a scene in Goodfellas where Joe Pesci goes to his mum's house and like they all have a meal and the mum's got them food and they've got a guy in the boot of the car while they're eating food inside. And like he really was fascinated by that juxtaposition of like this little family, this little mother in this house, you know, and that really sort of inspired The Sopranos as well. So, yeah. It's
a lot like building a CIA base beneath a Bymore.
Mm-hmm. Like
What about Breaking Bad? Have you watched all of Breaking Bad, Mal?
I've watched zero episodes of Breaking Bad. I know, that's another one. I know, it's another one that I was like, actually at the time when it first started, I thought, oh, I should watch that. But I was involved in so many other things that I never did.
My question was going to be how far you stuck with the lead character in that, because that's kind of similar. Situation,
yeah,
I suppose.
Not at all is your answer.
Oh well, you're gonna watch that next. Let's give Mel a reason each to watch to continue The Sopranos. I want to put music in there. The music is phenomenal, and the last episode ends with a great piece of music as well. But it's also one of the most iconic endings. One of the endings that created the biggest debates, even outside Chuck.
I actually have watched the ending.
Oh,
because
geez.
It was such a huge national conversation. No, you guys, there are a lot of shows I don't watch, but I know what's going on, and it just comes with the territory.
Because you write about TV.
Right, and I mean, season 4 of Game of Thrones, I haven't watched it, but I know it happens because I would go read the recaps and then be like, no, I don't need to watch that. I don't need those visuals in my head.
No,
The ending, though, I mean, like...
I know, I ruined it for myself, but I was curious. I'm like, what has everyone so upset? And I get it, but I mean, and obviously I hadn't watched the whole series and I'm just now starting the series, but it makes sense to me as an outsider.
Now this brings in a new question, which is, can you write off an entire series? Should Mel not bother having seen it?
Because I know how it ends?
Yeah.
Doesn't that negate the journey?
No.
I mean, are you destination versus, the destination is more important than the journey?
Yes. Of course. And in fact, it kind of annoyed me because I came to it late and I knew that there was controversy about the ending. It kind of ruined the watching of the rest of it a little bit because I was going, oh, how's it going to end? And for the wrong reasons. Matt, give us your reasons that Mel should carry on with Sopranos.
Performances. I think the central characters throughout the series of Tony, Carmela, what's the doctor's name? Jennifer Melfi, and Chris Montesanti, are unbelievable. I mean, Gandolfini aside, because obviously everyone talks about that. Edie Falco as Carmela. There is a scene, and I think it's season 5. I don't know why I'm talking about it because I'm not going to tell you what it is.
No.
But my wife watched it already.
Matt.
No. Yes. Highlights on YouTube. No, my wife and I watched it, and we just had to pause it afterwards. We're both actors, and we just went back and watched it again straight away because she is incredible, and the journey of their relationship is the most fascinating thing about the show, because there's that intrinsic battle. She's having the same battle that the viewer is having, in that she's come into this family from outside and is having to deal with the consequences of it, but getting the rewards as well.
Yeah.
And so her character is in a way more fascinating than any of the others, except perhaps maybe the kids. I don't know, but it's worth watching for them. I cannot think of a stronger cast.
Yeah, I would like to add to that Carmela's food as well. Food is a massive part of The Sopranos, and Carmela's.
And it made me angry, the food in The Sopranos, because I don't live in America.
Yeah,
and I can't get it.
Yeah,
but you can.
Yeah, you can, Mel.
Aren't you like right next door to Italy? I mean, you guys can go to Italy as quickly as I can get to Texas.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not the same. It's been Americanized.
That's true. Yes. My younger brother actually owned an Italian restaurant here.
Oh, really?
For a couple of years. And then he decided that the restaurant business was not for him, and he shut it down, and I cried. because it was so good. Such good food. And we have not a drop of Italian blood in us, but we do know how to eat. It was good.
Matt, sorry, Jamie, reasons for Mel to carry on?
Well, that's pretty much covers it, Mel. But I'd say, lastly, Steve Van Sant as Silvio, his like lieutenant, the best shoulder actor ever. The guy uses his shoulders in an incredible way. Worth watching just for his shoulder movements. All right.
Do you watch Lilyhammer, Mel?
No. What's that?
What's Lilyhammer? Lilyhammer is the next light TV show that you're going to watch. It's on Netflix. Yeah, you got Netflix, haven't you? It's on Netflix.
It's the next light.
It's set in light, as it like Chuck, you know, a kind of light entertainment. It is set in Norway, and it's sort of a spin-off, but not really. But Steven Van Zandt is the main part, and it's the idea of a mafia guy who gets put in witness protection, but in a small village in Norway, which is the most bureaucratic country in the world, and it's very funny and it's very good, and irrelevant now because you haven't seen that either. So good.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, you can. And did you also say, Matt, that you're an actor?
Yeah.
I didn't know you were an actor.
Yeah.
I thought you worked in some building.
I do that too.
Okay. Well, congratulations on that.
As opposed to actors who work outside buildings.
Yeah. Most actors actually don't really work in theatres or on film, so it's...
No, exactly. That's why I work in the office. But no, what I would say is that it is a show that you... if you look at the first series and you look at the... How many are there? Is there six or seven?
Six, I think.
Are we talking about Sopranos or Lilyhammer?
Sopranos.
I haven't seen Lilyhammer. But you can see a clear line of evolution in that show more than any other, I think, that I've watched. And not Mad Men, actually. But it really does get better as you go through. Because what I mean by that is the first season it seems so amateurish after you watch the sixth one. Not to say that the first season is bad, but like it really, particularly the pilot, like that bit where he runs through the university campus chasing after the guy, and there's some kind of wacky music, and it all seems a bit, all seems a bit capery. And then when you see how far it's gone and how nuanced and deep it is by the sixth and seventh series, it's unbelievable. It's number two on my big show list.
Wow. Let's
what's
do,
number one?
Mad Men.
The Wire's number one.
The Wire is number one.
The Wire. Isn't that number one on everyone's list?
You can tell Matt's an actor, though, can't you? He likes punishing things. He likes things that drag him over the coals. What are you? Let's just go around everybody's top three just to see where we are at the moment. So, Matt, top three. The Wire.
The Wire, Sopranos, 6 Feet Under.
Very dark. Very dark. Jamie?
Breaking Bad, Mad Men, Sopranos, maybe.
Good. Mel?
Of all time?
Of all time.
Jeez. I have a hard time listing, you know, doing that sort of thing because it kind of depends on my mood. But
well, just go with whatever mood you're in now.
All right. Well,
God, we were doing Gilmore so Girls. Well. We were doing so Gilmore Girls.
I know. Gilmore Girls, except for the last season. The last season was good, but it wasn't great. Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I think that holds up well to the test of time. And gosh, not movies. I keep having movies flitting through my head.
Where's Chuck?
Does Chuck not make this list?
Chuck's it's top five, but I don't know it'd be top three.
Jesus.
Maybe it's number three right now.
Wow. Yeah,
maybe it's number three right now.
Chuck's at number one for me. Chuck is it?
Chuck's number one for you, well, really.
See, you just watched it.
I've realized.
You don't have like emotional baggage that I have with Chuck. That's part of the theme. I take the emotional baggage out, then yeah, it's number three.
I can hear people laughing at me everywhere. And the thing is, I asked myself the question after we did the podcast last week. I went and watched an episode and stuff, and I just sort of said to myself, why is it that you mention Chuck on every single podcast? Why would I do that? And it must be that it's my favorite. That and Mad Men.
It's you're infatuated with it right now. That's fine.
It's for, yeah,
I'm in the throes of a Harry Potter obsession. I get it. Everything is related to Harry Potter.
I left it a year ago. And if I have a conversation with anybody about TV, it's West Wing, Mad Men and Chuck. And I've seen loads of stuff. And I've obsessed over Dexter. I'm obsessing over Good Wife now. And
That's such a good show.
You know, it's great stuff out there. But for some for whatever reason, that is the show for me. That is the one that...
For the record, West Wing and Mad Men are 4 and 5 on my list.
Are they?
Yeah.
West Wing is also such a good show. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Well, let's wait and see till Matt's finished.
But you only gave us one, Howl.
Sorry?
You only gave us your top one, first.
No, Chuck, choice. Mad Men and West Wing.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Definitely. The Wire's good, but God, Matt, I mean, it needs to rocket up its arse sometimes, doesn't it? Jesus.
No, it doesn't. That's what's so beautiful about it.
Yeah, you would say that.
It's holding on to the rocket. It's showing you the rocket, and it doesn't light it.
Look, put your Stanislavski book down. I'm going to use this every time we speak. All right, Mel. So for the food, the music, the characters... The change in who you sympathise with, will you carry on, please, to episode 4 of The Sopranos?
I will. Yeah.
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah. I'll watch 2 more.
Well done.
It's good enough that I'm not going to completely reject it. I want to give it a little more of a chance.
Great.
I don't know. There's also that conflict of you're telling me that eventually I'll come to sympathize and empathize with Tony Soprano, and what does that say about me? What does that say about you three?
No, well, I'm not saying that you will. I'm saying there might be other people that you feel that for.
Also, you've got some terrible objectification of women to look forward to, because I know you guys
That's already happened. Yes, I was actually telling Howell earlier that there was. I have a connection between your concerns about Sarah Walker and The Sopranos. I mean, how many scenes am I going to be looking forward to with naked women in the background as they dance around poles?
A few.
Is this going to be common? Yeah. And that serves what purpose?
None. Other than it's the environment that they function in. But no, it's completely ludicrous in places.
Yeah.
But they are objectifying women. They are portraying characters that are incredibly sexist.
Yeah. I would like to state for the record that I both enjoy sex and like seeing women wearing very little. Now that isn't to say that men should also be dressed in very little more. I would just like to make that statement. I don't want anybody to think that I am putting out there and editing a podcast which wants people to wear less sexy clothes. Okay?
Just get that straight. You're heterosexual male. We get it.
100%. But I think this whole argument that Yvonne Strofsky shouldn't take her clothes off is ridiculous. As long as Yvonne's happy, I'm happy. Matt's feelings are irrelevant on the subject. So, Ron, if you listen,
well, I hate sex in all its forms, and we've covered that.
Matt is a monk. We have learnt this already.
Well, your poor wife.
So, where do we go?
I had sex once, and I got a kid, and that's so you know.
That's what put him off.
It's a disaster.
Right, good. Where do we go next week? I mean, God. Oh, I've no idea. We need to think about this. But for the meantime, thank you, Matt. Thank you, Mel, once again. And you're welcome back next week or whenever to talk about your shows. We need at least an update on Chuck and Sopranos every few weeks, I think.
Sure.
Jamie, Chuck, updates? Anything? Crickets?
Yeah, you're going to get it.
Now, is this a threat?
Sewage update.
Or
So you're going to get the chuck with you. It's going to happen. That's what I was trying to say. I just
you were just doing the podcast one-handed again for some reason.
Yeah. Well, my tea's going cold. Are we ready now?
Yeah. You mean are we finished? Yes, we have started it and finished it now.
Okay.
All right.
Great.
Excellent.
This is the most professional show I've ever been on.
Oh my god. I'm sorry, everybody. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks,
thank you.
Al.
Bye.
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 See ya.